No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's BBS RadioOne. This week we have several veterans and veteran service providers with us to discuss veterans in America today in preparation for this week's celebration of Veterans Day. So please call in tonight and be part of the conversation. Tell us how you feel about veterans and what their service means to you. Again, the number is 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us. Before I go any further, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Maria, who is joining us from California. Hello, Maria. And let me tell our technician, Don, that he lost Sergeant Bynum, and she's waiting to be called back. So let's get her on the line so that we have her on the show. How are you, Maria?
I'm terrific, Michael. How are you doing? I know this was a big week for you.
It was a big week for us, not only because we have a new co-sponsor of the New Columbia Mission Act, Representative James Langvin, a Democrat from Rhode Island's 2nd District. So we'd like to thank the congressman for being our 126th co-sponsor in the House. And in addition to that, my colleague, Senator Strauss, flew to Brussels to deliver an application to make us part of the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, which goes before the UN and before other governmental bodies around the world. And the process went very well. We're not making an official announcement yet, but we expect the announcement to be made tomorrow, and we're pretty sure we're getting in, so we will have Senator Strauss in a few weeks to come and talk about this.
So, Michael, if folks want to know what the announcement is tomorrow, where can they go to find out what the news is that you're going to be sharing?
Well, we're going to have we'll put it on our website at www.statehood.org. So that's DCstatehood.org, and we'll put the announcement up there. We'll make sure it's posted.
Okay, and then maybe we can help push it through with our social media tools that you and I use.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's big news, I'm sure, one way or the other. You guys were engaging in a very interesting and novel and potentially very beneficial conversation.
Yes, it is because and especially poignant today when we're talking about veterans, because we need to get this on the world stage. We have over 200,000 veterans who have served in the district who are treated like second-class citizens, and that's wrong. And our big problem is that most people don't know that the people of District Columbia don't have the same rights that everybody else has. So anything we can do to get out there and get the message out helps us. That's our feeling, at least.
Perfect. Well, thanks for sharing.
And we're here to talk about veterans, right? One of our most valuable resources.
Absolutely. Without them, we wouldn't have our freedoms.
That's right.
So if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and introduce our guests. We have Yolanda Bynum.
Do.
She's a veteran, and she has suffered disabilities with her service to our country. We have Eric Hughes, who helps veterans with legal problems. And we also have Lance Orndorff, who is a Navy veteran who runs a veterans program in the Washington area. Thanks to all three of you for being on our show, and thank you very much for your service and your sacrifice to our country.
My pleasure to serve.
Yeah, well,
thank you for having me,
guys. And we're sorry about the few technical difficulties we've been having at the beginning of the show. We know that the service never has any technical difficulties. You guys all run like a well-oiled machine, and there are never any glitches. But unfortunately, in the world of internet radio, sometimes there are glitches. So, Maria, I'll leave it up to you to. Well, you've introduced people. Let me ask Yolanda a question. Yolanda, how are you readjusting to civilian life? How are things going for you?
Things are going pretty good. Thank you so much. They're going even better since I was able to get my my disability. And because of the people that I was connected with, I was able to get it within 30 days. But in order for me to get in the 30 days, and, you know, most times that's not normal, I had to be listed as a homeless vet. And being a homeless vet, my paperwork goes from the bottom of the pile to the very top of the pile. So then things get done really quickly. Most people, they get their disability within 2 to 3 years most times.
Well, that's good to hear, because we have a serious problem in the District of Columbia, and we'll ask Mr. Hughes and Mr. Orndorff, because they probably know about this more in a minute, but we have a serious problem in the District of Columbia with homeless vets. We have many too many homeless vets, and in my opinion, you should never have a homeless vet. I mean, the people that stood up for this country should never have to worry about having a place to call home. So, you know, it's good to hear that you've been put at the top of the list because of that. What can we do to help you that's not being done? Is there anything that we can do as civilians to help you in your particular situation as a disabled vet?
Well, there isn't anything right now that I can think about, but I do know that there are veterans that have served, and I've seen personally veterans that stand outside of the VA hospital, and they're homeless, and because of the fact they're not sick, they can't go in, and they're not embraced, and they're homeless. And I asked this one young lady, I said, well, can't you go in there just to sort of camp out? And she goes, no, because I'm not sick. And that troubled me, because the young lady had no place to go. The hospital was open, and there's a lot of places that she could have just sat to get outside from the elements, but she wasn't able to go in, and that sort of bothered me.
Well, that would bother me, too. And how's your medical care? Are you getting decent medical care? Because, you know, we've heard all these horror stories about how veterans have to wait months and months and sometimes years to get medical care. Is your medical care okay?
Well, yes. My medical care is great. Because of the fact I've been diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, so I have a great neurology team. And because of that, I'm treated differently than people with other illnesses. So anytime I call my neurologist, they get me in right away. But I know that this isn't the case for many of our veterans.
Yeah. Maria, do you have any questions for Sergeant?
Yeah, we can touch back on something that we discussed last week on the program, Michael. Again, thank you so much for your service to our country, Ms. Bynum.
Yeah,
really appreciate it. And I'm sorry that you're suffering so physically, but glad to hear that the VA is stepping up and taking care of you as it should. I don't know if you're aware that a 37-year-old major became the third woman to complete the Ranger School last month. And so she is one of three that have done so. Do you think that that's going to help women in the military?
Yes, I think it's going to help women a lot. One of the things, as a veteran, when I was in the military, I was a photographer. And being a photographer, I worked for President Clinton, and I usually work echelon above corps. And the thing is, a lot of women, there are different, there aren't a lot of things that we're cut off from, but at the same time, there are certain jobs that we can't do. And even with you saying her being a ranger, the male soldiers, they look at the females as being a disability because of the fact that, or a liability, because of the fact that we have our monthly and things like that. And women may fall to the back sometimes because of our makeup. You know, we're sort of looked at this differently. But I know when I was in the military, I always had to step up a little harder than my male peers, so they're not looking at me as being different.
And I can see how that might be because of what you so wisely said, that sometimes women are viewed as a liability. And what the Rangers made certain when they shared this announcement, because she's one of the oldest of the soldiers, period, male or female, to pass this Ranger School, they said that there was not anything done to adjust for females joining. They had to pass everything the way the men did. Now, she spent about 180 days completing her Ranger School, which is more than the minimum of 61 days, because she repeated several parts, but that's normal. They call that common practice. So I'm glad to hear that you think that this is going to be good news, because it's certainly quite an achievement. Apparently, those that pass the Ranger School are a part of only 3% of soldiers that do so. So then you make it even more rare when you take of those 3%, how many were female? So I'm glad to hear that you think that.
What's that old saying that Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in heels? So that's
I love
true.
That.
Women really do step up all the time. And it's really, I think, a perception that we have that has to be changed. And when you have a 37-year-old mother become a ranger, I think that perception starts to change personally. Can I ask Mr. Hughes, can you tell us what you do? What are the typical legal problems that veterans are having these days?
Yes, sir. So first, Senator Brown, Ms. Sanchez, thank you very much for having me, and to all the men and women who have served in uniform, thank you very much. I am a staff attorney at a local D.C. legal aid organization, and I run our Veterans Legal Assistance Project. And we're specifically designed to assist homeless and no and low-income veterans in the D.C. area. And as far as the most reoccurring legal issues, you know, VA disability compensation, more often than not, you know, denials of compensation benefits. I'm seeing a lot of military discharge upgrades in that veterans were discharged with a less than honorable or bad paper discharge, and so they are ineligible for VA benefits and are sort of left to their own devices or have to depend on, you know, DC resources or nonprofit resources. Also, family law issues, child support, housing issues, you know, landlord-tenant. It's just, you know, veterans certainly have a whole different experience, you know, having served in the military and then coming back and, you know, being civilians, if you will, especially those who, you know, again, going back, have less than honorable discharges. They are at a total disadvantage. But even those with honorable who have service-connected injuries or need VA disability compensation, they, again, are, you know, sort of left to their own sometimes, and then it can be homeless or poverty-stricken. And so you just see the military service being a common factor.
Mr. Hughes, how do you get your funding? Who supports you?
My project is privately funded by the William S. Abel Foundation, and they're located in Bethesda, and so they're a D.C. area private foundation, and they, you know, wanted to get together because they noticed in surveys and data collection that there was a gap in service to veterans. And so they got together with local law firms here in D.C. and other service providers and sat down and they said, okay, how can we assist veterans and do it in an efficient and expeditious way? And, you know, my hope is that this project is the result of all that brainstorming. We launched June 1 of this year.
Oh, and again, so you're new.
Yes, ma'am. We are pretty new, but we have had a very robust response in the D.C. area. You know, a lot of that was me hitting the pavement, you know, getting out and spreading the word, you know, because our core focus is, at least my project, is on VA disability compensation and military discharge upgrades. And it would, you know, it surprises me even to this day to think that here in D.C. sort of, you know, there are so many attorneys in here. You can't throw a quarter without hitting one. There are so many service right. organizations. That there's such a gap in service to veterans, and you know, so certainly we're, you know, privately funded, but again, it's the robust response is just leaving me. I step back and think, you know, why is it, you know, just now that this project is able to tap into this, and how can I coordinate with, you know, government agencies? And indeed, that's what I've done with the D.C. Mayor's Office for Veterans Affairs. We've partnered up to do. They're called DD-214 upgrade clinics, and we present twice monthly clinics to veterans who need assistance with getting their discharge upgrades so they can get them if possible, then get VA benefits. And, you know, I'm finding that working with the government agencies, especially the D.C. local level, is having a tremendous return.
That's actually inspiring.
Yeah, it really is to hear that the government is stepping up to the plate. And you know very well that one of my favorite veterans on the face of the planet is Tammy Lambert. So I'm sure that the mayor's office is being very helpful. But it's good. It really is good to know that the government's stepping up to the plate, because we hear very often about the problems, but we don't hear about the good things that are happening. And let me see if I can get Mr. Orndorff in here, who's a Navy veteran. And, you know, Maria said this, but please let me say this because I've been remiss. Thank you for your service, Mr. Orndorff. Thank you for your service, Sergeant Yolanda. And thank you for your service to veterans, Mr. Hughes. We appreciate Sergeant Bynum's service, and I know that you were in the Navy, Mr. Orndorff, and you told me the other day when we talked on the phone that things are getting better for veterans. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Well, I can, and, you know, we've been in this game for about 13 years, and the entire veterans operation, I mean, the military is big enough as it is. It's a behemoth. And then you take the veterans portion of that, where these guys and gals go to after service. It is a huge, huge operation in its total. And so you take any one part of that, and there's still lots to do. But what happens is, and what I was making reference in our conversation earlier this week, was that what rises to the top of the chatter are the individual circumstances where the system has broken for the individual or several individuals. But that truly is not where the bigger problems are. There are systemic issues that come just as a matter of the operation being so large. And I'm so glad to hear about the legal aid issues that we're talking about today, because that is one of those systematic underlying undertows that takes so many men and women under. In the part of the world that I work in terms of veteran services, we work with career and employment and advising. And this is where one of those undertows of the dishonorable discharge or less than honorable discharge can stop all of the great benefits in their tracks and leaves a veteran standing outside the door with no money to pay for rent and no job and no way to get skills because he can't get his benefits for education. So here you see one of those systemic issues in play. is that service member's in service. He's in combat. War is hell. Things happen. People can get post-traumatic stress while they're in service. If they act out on that post-traumatic stress, they can have an incident that brings them before a disciplinary board in the service. That can result in them getting a less than honorable discharge. They're put out of the military. Now, the reason they had the incident was because of the service-related disability that occurred while they were in, but that got them put out with a less than honorable. Now they can't get medical. They can't get emergency housing in a lot of cases. They're stripped of all their benefits for education. It makes a bad problem 10 times worse. And that's what my colleague there was talking about, looking at DD-214 upgrades. That is a critical, critical need, and I'm so glad they're working on that. Because even in my corner of the world, my small part where we're working with vets, we get 10 to 15 applications just for truck driving every single day from active duty military. Well, but we would get a lot more. We would be getting more from those who have gotten out because they have less than honorable. Very rarely is the less than honorable for something egregious. Most of the time, and maybe my colleague here on the phone can attest to this, many times it's not for something egregious. It was an administrative express route to get them out of a service. So they wave a less than honorable in front of a soldier who's already distressed, and they take it.
Wow.
They get put out, and now they have nothing, and now they're homeless because they can't get a job, and they can't get training, and they can't get medical services.
Wow. That's horrible to think that that's happening as frequently as it sounds like it is.
Frequently.
Well,
it's a constant.
Let me just first say to our technician, Don, that he needs to remember that I'm on the phone, so I can't see if people are calling in. So if they are, please let us know soon, because we want our audience to be able to ask questions. But, yeah, I know that sometimes my brother, who was an F-111 pilot, was also a counselor at the Air Force Academy, and they had a guy brought up on charges because his girlfriend kissed him at a dance, and he was PDA, you know, public display of affection. I couldn't believe that they even had a term for it. I said, I can't believe you guys have a term for, you know, somebody. And yeah, it was a conduct on becoming an officer. Now, that wasn't a serious charge, but I throw that out there because, yeah, the military can be very strict. I know that. And
there's these systemic problems. So when you hear about somebody who can't get an appointment, I'm not saying those things don't happen, but that's sort of like the sexy news story. That's not the hardcore underlying
right.
issues that we need Congress and others to force the issue to get some systematic change that can make it better. With this massive influx of veterans who are coming out of the military, you know, as we try to work our way out of these conflicts, good luck to all of us, the number of just officers who are being RIFed, reduction in force, the RIFing of officers, 20 and 30,000 at a time who are coming out and they need services. And then there's all the enlisted who a lot of them had planned to make it a career, find that they're getting a pink slip and they're out on the street.
Right.
And they're trying to figure out what to do with themselves. And so there's a lot of work to do, and all of us here, we try to do our small corner of it. But the homeless issue
we appreciate your service, and tell us a little bit about your service. You were in the Navy. Were you a career military person?
I was not. It's one of the regrets you'll hear from many of us who have served and only served for 4 years. One of the few regrets in life is that we did not stay in. I went in 1980 and served in Reagan's Navy. I spent most of my time over in the Middle East. Things never really change. We were off the coast of Beirut. In fact, I was there in Beirut when the barracks was hit in 1983, where the 286 Marines were killed. And so that's where I spent a lot of my service, was over there. It was at the end of the Cold War, so things were still a little bit interesting. But what was going on there was really the genesis of what we're dealing with today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and can you speak to, before we take a break, I know that will be happening soon, I'm getting my master's in clinical psychology, and PTSD is a topic in nearly every one of my classes, regardless of what the focus is. Is it becoming more prevalent than it has been, or is it just becoming more newsworthy, or can you speak to that?
You can sort of relate the surfacing of post-traumatic stress in a way, not that it's the same condition, but the way it's coming to light as sexual abuse of women. You know, it was such a cultural quietness that went on where women were abused over the millennium and then even the last century, but it wasn't reported, so it didn't seem like there was that much of it. Well, now we're finding out how much women are abused in culture, and so it seems like there's more of it, but there's not. It's just that the reporting is coming to the surface. In the same way, post-traumatic stress has been in place. I mean, my father landed at Normandy, and when my mother talks about his behavior when he came back, and although he raised a great family of 8 kids, he was an alcoholic and had severe post-traumatic stress. They just didn't talk about it. It wasn't treated. So it's not that there's more of it. It's just that we're discovering what's actually taking place and what war does to people and why we shouldn't run there every time we get a chance.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for creating that distinction, because what I didn't understand about PTSD, and I've learned in my coursework, is that the flashbacks are as real as the actual episode was that creates the flashback. So
actually,
that the person experiencing the trauma is as if they were right there at that time going through it for the very first time.
Yes, but it can actually be worse, because whenever you have if you're hit by a roadside bomb and it happens without the awareness that it's going to take place, and so there's a reflective nature to it at the immediacy of the event. But what can happen a decade or 2 decades later is that you are so psychologically conditioned, knowing what's coming when you're going to have a flashback, you're so worn down, you're so beat down, that the flashback can be worse, actually is much worse than the initial incident.
Because of the anticipation.
Because of the anticipation, and you're worn down. You're not at the height of your mental health you were whenever you were hit the first time. You know, when you spend 20 years isolating, depression, and all these things, your world is built around not being well. And then you have an episode where this comes back to you, and you don't have the normal defenses, mm-hmm. and you're victimized again, but times 5.
Right. So well said.
Let me ask Mr. Hughes, how is the workflow where you are? Are you getting more cases than you can handle? Do you have any sense of that at this point? I know this is relatively new, but how many people need your legal services? Are you able to keep up with the demand?
Well, the fortunate aspect of my project is that I'm leveraging my partnerships with area law firms here in D.C., and so these law firms are the big ones, you know, the ones that have offices across the country and indeed some across the world. So they have hundreds of attorneys who are willing to dedicate their, you know, pro bono hours, because a lot of firms give, you know, up to between 50 and 100 billable hours towards pro bono. So I'm able to partner with these law firms to refer cases out, because answer to your question, yes, I'm getting more cases than I myself can handle. And that's, you know, again, going back to, it's interesting how, you know, again, we started in June 1, and all, you know, and since June 1, we've had over 60-plus veterans come to us for legal assistance. You know, with my partnership with the mayor's office and Director Lambert, we've had over 86 veterans come to us seeking assistance with discharge upgrades. And so, yes, there is a massive response to, you know, our saying we're here to help. And then, again, going back to working with pro bono attorneys, that's how I can try to take as many cases as possible, is by referring these out to attorneys. You know, I certainly myself would love to take them all on, but, you know, again, I'm one person, and then the attorney in me thinks, oh, well, there's an issue of, you know, ethical issue if I try to take on 100 cases that I can't do my due diligence and I can't serve them to the level and standard they need to be served.
And are you finding that local law firms are pretty receptive to helping you, to providing legal aid to veterans?
Yes, sir. They jump at it. I mean, you know, again, they are very gung-ho, and they are, and it's very interesting in dealing with veterans, and I approach it at, in that, you know, this is one area where there shouldn't be any competition among law firms and legal service providers. We all have the same goal. We want to assist veterans. And so for law firms, they don't look at it as a bottom line, as in, you know, it's a client's, you know, a billable thing. It's an American thing to do. So for them, they collaborate. And it's not, you know, oh, you're law firm X, I'm law firm Y. We have, you know, this past history. Let's join together and help veterans. And so that just enables me, you know, with the assistance of law firms to really try to find these veterans, get them in our system and get them the legal assistance. And hopefully after they've had their legal issues resolved, then they can move on to, you know, either finding gainful employment. If it's something where they were just given VA benefits, you know, starting getting health care, you know, at least getting taken care of. Legal issues should not be something they face at the end of the day.
Well, as soon as you have completely figured out how to get law firms to work together in Washington, we're going to send you up to Capitol Hill, and then you can train Democrats and Republicans how to get along. And maybe you can use the same, you know, logic that let's do it for America. Let's not do it for the team. Let's all work together like we're working together for veterans. Let's all work together for America.
It's another career arc, Eric.
Yes, there you go.
Absolutely.
Another career arc. And Maria Sanchez can tell you about that because she's had many successful career arcs, even though she's not old. Her age belies the fact, but she has had many successful career tracks.
Well, what I love about what the discussion has been about is helping make this world a better place. And in this place, we're talking about veterans. And who better to help than the folks who keep us free and keep our rights free than the people who've put their lives on their line and the sacrifices and what their families had to go through, not let alone the person with the boots on the ground. So to me, this is a win-win-win. And again, thank you so much, all of you, for everything that you're doing to shine this light, because what better week to talk about veterans than this week?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I come from a veteran family, and I also come, I'm a little older than you are, Maria, so I come through the middle of the Vietnam War where veterans, I think, lost some of their status, unfortunately. You know, we confused our government policy with the people that stood up for our freedom. I think that was a sad time for us. We have a caller, Joel from DC.
They dropped out.
Oh, they did. They dropped off.
But you might as well share the phone number again before we take our break, and then other folks can.
Are you there, Joel? Hello?
Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, yay.
Hey, good. Joel, do you have a question?
Hey, well, I just wanted to call and share. I work here in D.C. with an organization called Valor. I just want to share we provide free financial education to veterans and their families. And if anyone wants to find out any more for themselves, they can check out our website at valorusa.org.
Nice.
Yeah, give that again. You and I talked briefly, Joel, and I think to kind of the other day, if I'm not mistaken, and I think the kind of work you're doing is very, very, very important. So slowly, give us that email address again, or web address where people can connect with your organization.
Absolutely. The organization is called Valor, and so the website is Valor.
So he dropped out there.
Have information.
Yeah, we're having a hard time hearing you.
We're having a hard time hearing you, but I see it right here. VALORUSA.org. And what kind of things do you do, Joel? What's a typical thing for you?
So we work with partner organizations here in D.C. to provide financial education in several different ways. Can you hear me still?
Yes.
Yeah, you're coming in clear now.
Okay, perfect. And so, you know, we're with our partners, we help primarily to help develop programs for them, but we also do provide in-person workshops and that sort of thing.
Well, that's great, and I think that that's something that veterans really need. I know that the ones that I know are not the best money managers in the world, especially the career veterans that I know. So I'm sure that the work you're doing is great, and I appreciate it, and thank you for your service. And again, for those who may be listening who are veterans and want to see what Joel's doing and see how he can help, you go to VALORUSA.org. Thanks for calling in, Joel. I hope you come back and visit us sometime, and we'll have you on the show, and you can talk more in depth about the things you do.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Sergeant Bynum, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Tell me, if there's one thing that I could do for you, if there's one thing as a civilian that I could do to help veterans in your situation, what do you think it would be? What do you need help with?
I would need somebody who could help advocate for medical benefits. I have been falsely diagnosed for my MS for over 12 years. And I was fighting for an earlier award date. And what that is back in 98 when I first got out of the military, the whole right side of my face stopped working. They said, oh, you had a stroke. Within about 3 weeks, everything came back and everything was okay. Then, and that was in 98. In 2001, I lost a lot of my children during 9/11. And if I looked at somebody, I saw four people, and I went and they told me, they gave me some diagnosis, and then it was four different episodes where they gave me something. Within a couple of days, I got all of my faculties back, but these were all symptoms of MS. And so when I was diagnosed as having MS, I was like, okay, I'm putting in for it. And they said, no, you can only get it when you can only get your disability when you put in for it. Okay, back in 98, I'm not supposed to tell a doctor, no, I didn't have a stroke, I had MS. And so they're using this against me. I'm not that professional that's gone to medical school. Okay, I need them to say, because my job was to be a soldier, that and that only, okay? And so here it is, I'm fighting and for an earlier award date saying, no, I'm a disabled vet since 1998, not 2010, when they finally decided that I have MS. When they finally looked, Dr. Mitchell Wallin, who wrote for the Oxford Medical Journal back in 90 on MS, so he's been there a long time, he looked and he said, you've had MS since 1998. And he looked at it one time and he saw it, okay? You know, I know MS and other things like lupus, you really can't tell because it's a neurological disease. But at the same time, when he wrote on there that everything was retroactive to 1998, it should have been a no-brainer that they should have given me my award date back 1998 when I went there and they told me I had a stroke.
Well, that sounds like something that Mr. Hughes can help with. Is that the kind of problem that you run into, Mr. Hughes, and in are these the kind of legal problems that veterans really need help with?
Yes, I do see, you know, the cases where veterans come to me that they've applied for VA benefits, you know, and compensation, and they've either been denied or they've been given a service-connected rating, and that service-connected rating, the percentage rating, does not adequately represent the level of their disability, and so then they have to go back through the process of appealing that and then going to get, you know, medical evidence. Part of the disability compensation process is the VA has what's called compensation and pension exams, or, you know, C&P exams, as we sort of say shorthanded. And I've heard horror stories of veterans who go to those C&P exams, and the doctor, the medical professional there who's supposed to, you know, look over the veteran and sort of give them a once-over to see if, you know, their claim has merit. Well, they don't look over the veteran. You know, they just have the veteran sit down for 5 minutes, read over some paperwork, and then, you know, say, okay, thank you, we'll make a decision. And the decision is, unfortunately, they're denied. And the veteran's like, the doctor didn't even, you know, ask me to stand up, take my clothes. You know, it's just, unfortunately, it's a very reoccurring situation, and one that I do see very often.
In my case, and I'll tell you, in my case, that meeting, that examination, was of several weeks after they made their decision.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you know, the VA tries to schedule these C&P exams, but they do it through the mail. And so if a veteran, you know, especially a homeless veteran who may have transient housing or not have a stable address, well, they don't get notice. And so these exams are scheduled. The veteran misses it. The VA then tries to schedule another one. Again, they miss it. And then so the VA says, well, you missed it, so we're just going to summarily deny you because, you know, we haven't either done our due diligence or, you know. So there's a lot that goes into these exams.
Right.
Is there a contract of sorts so that folks know that that's what they're up against? Because it seems like it's after the fact the punishment is being meted out when, you know, life gets in the way, especially if they have transportation and housing issues.
Right. You know, it's unfortunately you're dealing with the VA, and it's the second largest cabinet agency behind the DOD. And so they, you know, when they do things right, they do it amazingly well. But unfortunately, we hear it a lot in the media that there's a lot that they're not doing well. And again, since they're the second largest cabinet agency, one might say they're a bit bloated.
Mm-hmm.
And for Congress, the solution, it seems to be just either throw more money at it and hope that it solves the problem. But that's not the case. We need actually personnel, human, you know, man, woman power at the VA, you know, either at the regional level, on the ground, or up through the chain of command that gets it, that understands that, you know, life has a way of getting in the way of even the best made plans, and so there needs to be some sort of compassionate understanding, if you will.
Right.
Of course, you know, that's easier said than done.
Well, yes, because somebody isn't coming to the table, how can you expect to get the help that you need? But if there are egregious circumstances that prevented that, and it happened twice, that also sounds realistic, too. And weather is a factor as well.
Absolutely.
So my question to both Eric and Lance is, do you have websites that you want to help us promote and to share now on the program?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I mean, I don't want to interrupt my colleague, but as far as my website, it's nlsp.org. That's abbreviated for Neighborhood Legal Services Program, and then /veterans. It's, you know.
And then Lance?
Oh, and before I give mine, I want to ask now, are your legal services geographically restricted because of licensure, or?
Well, my organization is based here in the District of Columbia. Since, you know, as far as VA disability compensation or military discharge upgrades, those are federal issues. And so for federal issues, you just need a state bar license. You know, as far as our geographic limitation, you know, I serve the District of Columbia, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County, Maryland, and then the portions of Northern Virginia that touch D.C. And the reason that we have to limit it is that, you know, we are a legal aid organization. We have limited resources, and, you know, again, I'd love to help everyone, but I'm not able to.
Do you refer out, Eric, if geography is an issue and someone comes to you because of, let's say, this program, then they happen to hear about your resources?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. I do what I can to go, you know, I think the term of art is a warm handoff, you know, because it's one thing to say, oh, I'm sorry, sir or ma'am, I can't help you. Here's a phone number. Give them a call. Good luck.
Right.
If I know an individual that works at an organization, say a veteran comes to me with a legal issue in Baltimore or, you know, they need assistance in Baltimore, I know I have colleagues in Baltimore that I can reach out to and explain the situation, and then they have a heads up. And so the veteran individual has a foot in the door. But, yes, ma'am, absolutely, I am one for referrals and then trying to get the veteran assistance, even if it's, you know, across the country in California or down in Florida, you name it.
Perfect. Thank you, Eric. And, Lance, what can you share with us for us to help promote?
Well, you know, we our cornerstone programs are our Troops to Careers, which is troops2careers.com. Mm-hmm. Troops2careers.com, and there they can actually register for a no-cost career evaluation. It's we're not touchy-feely. We're very to the point, and it can be a very productive hour that they can get from us just by going to the website and requesting that consultation. Also, at our Troops2truckers.com, we're sort of the center of the universe for veterans who are wanting to go into an employment field that is very robust right now, where a veteran can go from zero to 35, 45,000 a year in about 2 months.
Wow.
And they can go to troopstotruckers.com to get more about that program. And something new is our Troops to Business. In fact, it was just launched today, so any mistakes people find on the website, forgive us. But after 13 years, we have up our Troops to Business, which we're in a new economy where people have skills, and it's time for them to go out there and hang a shingle out and start their own lawn business or cleaning business or whatever they want to do. And so we're there to connect them with seed funding to help them start their businesses.
Nice. Now, is it Troops to Truckers and troops2business.com?
There's troops2business.com, troops2careers.com, troops2truckers.com.
Perfect. Okay.
And let me just say something that I say all the time when I'm out talking to prospective employers. If you're running a business, I ran a business for 25 years. If you're out there running a business and you need employees, look, veterans are the people to hire. They've been pre-tested. They've already made a commitment to something bigger than themselves. They're very often very well-trained. It's unusual to find a veteran who's not very disciplined. They have all the kind of things that you look for, in my opinion, in a good employee. So when you're hiring a veteran and you're running a business, you're doing more of a favor for yourself than you are for the veteran. I just think it's a wise employment decision.
And you know what, Michael, along those lines, this afternoon in the news is an announcement from Starbucks that 2 years ago they pledged to hire at least 10,000 veterans and military spouses by 2018. And they announced this afternoon that they've surpassed the halfway mark.
All right. That makes me feel better about paying $4 for a cup of coffee. I feel like at least the veterans are benefiting. But no, Starbucks is very good. I'm just teasing. And that's great. And more companies should do that. More companies should set a goal of having more veterans. You know, I wish we had more time to talk about this, and we'll certainly have you folks back on again. If you're interested in coming, we'd love to have you back on. And thanks so much. We apologize for any technical difficulties tonight. We'll get those all straightened out. But Ms. Bynum, Mr. Hughes, and Mr. Orndorff, thank you so much for your service and for your continued service to veterans. I hope that everybody in America will, on Wednesday, November 11th, put their flag out and do what I do every Veterans Day, and that is I call all the veterans that I know, my brother, my friends, all the people I know that have served personally, and I thank them for their service. You know, I drive to the Vietnam Wall every year on my Harley Davidson. It's the one day a year I still polish it and get it out there, and I meet thousands and thousands of veterans who just want you to stand up and say thank you. We acknowledge what you've done to make our country a safe and wonderful place to live. So I hope we all do that.
And I'm going to give one more small plug, and I have no skin in the Starbucks game, but active duty service members, veterans, and military spouses, on November 11th, a tall, hot brewed coffee is free.
Great. And that's the way it should be everywhere.
Yeah,
so
nice.
Mr. Senator, yeah. Mrs. Sanchez, if I may for a second.
Yes,
sure.
Go ahead.
Okay, there is a play that this young lady has. It's on PTSD. It's a great play, and I really believe everybody needs to see it because it talks about the trauma of not just people that's in this current conflict, but people dating back to World War II and the Vietnam War. This young man that I know, I was helping him write up his paperwork, and something as simple as 4th of July, it totally changed him. And anytime, this used to be his favorite holiday, but anytime they do the fireworks, mm-hmm. he runs for cover because it's like sorties going off again. Mm-hmm. And so just as you said earlier, Mrs. Sanchez, that it's almost like you're right there, and people, they just don't know what PTSD is. But this play is something I really think that we need to have all over this country. So, you know, people can embrace people and not just look at them like they may be crazy. These people have been in, I've never served in a conflict, but being here, I mean, something like Bosnia-Herzegovina, I've seen the heads being decapitated and things like that for briefing. All of these things hurt. That's, again, this is all a part of post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I think we all need to have a look at it and know what it looks like.
Thank you
What's
for that.
What's the name of the play?
The name
What's
is
the name
called
of the play?
Benchmark.
Benchmark.
Yes,
okay.
I'll get the information to you. It's a very good play.
Nice.
Okay,
thank
and we'll
you.
Put it up on our website. Thanks again, Sergeant. And we're going to leave tonight. We're going to play you out. We're going to play out with a song by Lee Greenwood called God Bless the USA. I think we all know it. And this goes out to every single person that's ever worn the uniform of the United States military and has stood up for me and my family and Maria and her family and every other American citizen. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars.